Live from the dash, swinging with Big Yon podcast. We finally here. We done made it. Episode one. It's a long time coming, but we here. You know, we got a lot to talk about, a lot of ground to cover, and it's going down right now. About to make a call for my first guest. Who else could it have been but to have my twin brother in the mix calling that boy Xbox, man. Let me see what we got here. All right.
Yums, what's good?
Whoa, what's up with it, X, man? What's going on, man?
I'm very happy right now, just doing some computer work at this time of recording, so things looking good.
Man, look, you know what time it is, man. You checking in, man. It's the Swinging with Big Yon podcast. We episode one, first episode of many ever. You know what I'm talking about? And you got the pleasure to be number one. You know what I'm talking about? But you're an asshole, you know, but it's all good. Man, we got a lot of ground to cover, man. So let's get right into it, man. You know, first things first, man. Have you watched the Free Meek documentary?
No, you know what? You told me to watch it. I still have yet to sit my butt down and actually watch the documentary. It's not because I don't want to, or I think it's whack, because Meek Mill's story is just fascinating altogether, with his legal run-ins and the way that the judge is treating them. You know, it insinuates that they have this secret, you know, back and forth relationship, or maybe not even a relationship, but that the judge is definitely bitter about something. I'm not going to insinuate what that something is, but she's definitely mad at Meek for some personal reason.
Man, look, I'm going to tell you something. I watched Free Meek documentary, and that judge is an asshole and a real-life bitch. You know what I'm talking about? Like, that Free Meek documentary will piss you off, man, because you really got to see from a true perspective. It wasn't like it was from one side perspective, man, even though that judge is probably going to fight and say that they defamed her character and all that. But you could tell, like, she was picking at Meek, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, From the initial reason that he got arrested for supposedly pointing a firearm at police and everything, to all of the probation violations and everything, that judge was fucking with Meek, and the shit was horrible, and it pissed me off. But the documentary did do a good job of covering the ground of Meek Mill's case from 2007 to now.
Oh, wow, all the way back to 2007. See, that's crazy. You know, because on the documentary thumbnail, the actual cover image for it, you know, it pays homage to the mixtape he released, I think, about like 2016, DMC4, I think it's, well, no, Dream Chasers, DC4, I'm sorry, DMC4, thinking Devil May Cry, Dream Chasers 4, where he had, you know, it was his like 16-year-old teenage picture on it. You know, he had the bruised eye, you know what I'm saying? So that's crazy, man. All the way going back then.
Believe it or not, that cover was a dope cover, but that's his real mugshot. He got that mugshot got from the 2007 arrest. The police whooped his ass while they was arresting him, supposedly raiding a drug house, but had no evidence or none of that. You got to watch it to understand, and I don't want to sit here. I watched it, but I don't want to, like you say, misquote or mistalk about, you know, something that happened in there. But they whooped his ass, and that's a real picture of him being beat up, and his family was pissed about it.
Yeah, that's, see, I didn't even know that much story even existed to that cover image. And you even mentioning that, telling me that, is just very enlightening. And now when I actually see that picture, I'm just going to have a totally different viewpoint, you know, just Meek Mill, period. When I think, what was it, 2017, he released his Wins and Losses album? That was a couple of years ago before this championship album just got released. You know, I think that album is clear in terms of the losses he suffered in the past, like, paved the way for all these W's, because he has a lot of fan support, and there's no stopping him to this Liz deal and, you know, all these other things that's going on. But there is a maturity that I personally appreciate about Meek Mill, just from the way that he was, just like almost since 2015 and going to jail and just getting out. His whole demeanor was just, just changed. He was willing to bury that hatchet with Drake, you know, and there was no, like, there was no qualms about there was no hesitation in trying to bury that. It just really seemed like he wanted to move on and really embrace this newness that's before him. So I applaud the man. I really do.
Yeah, see, it's like this. That Meek Mills with that, what you call it, that beef with Drake and everything. See, all that was, they talk about all that in that Free Meek documentary. See, Meek was at a, when he sparked that beef out of nowhere with Drake, he'll tell you he was at a dark place in his life because of what he was going through from the jail situation with that judge. The man was on pills heavy, he'll tell you that. You know, it wasn't drug, it wasn't like crack or coke or none of that stuff. He was on pills heavy trying to not think about, you know, going to jail every time he go to court and stuff like that. And that's where the Drake thing sparked. So him being able to you know, let bygones be bygones and stuff, it was just really a grown man maturing and understanding the faults of what he had going on and stuff. So I respect Meek in that honor, man. Free Meek really made me like Meek Mill more, you know, because I was a fan. But, you know, I was a fan of, like, certain songs and stuff like that, you know, that Meek dropped and stuff. That's just me. But I, as a person and stuff, oh, I'm fucking with Meek Movement, man, you know. And now that he's a free man, it's really up.
Man, you know what? You know what really made me appreciate Meek Mill, or started to get my attention? Because a few years back, 2016 exactly, I started going back and listening to Fabulous's mixtape catalog. You know, 2009 Fabulous and up until this point is the Fabulous that I think I've been waiting on. I hated that whole, I'm making songs for the ladies, the R&B Fab. When he got into punchlines and he really, you know, focused on lyrics and delivering those songs, man, that's when I, you know, really appreciate it. But anyway, the whole point that I'm mentioning here is that he had a song with Meek Mill on, what was that Fabulous mixtape? It was the Soul Tapes, I think, part three. I think it was the Soul Tapes 3. And he had a song called Foreign on that, I think. You know, and I heard Meek Mill just give this kind of like, that whole shouty, you know, boisterous, like, flow he got, it made me like, okay, man, this is a kind of attractive pause, you know what I'm saying? It was really, it just caught my attention. It was charismatic. And, you know, from there, then I heard, you know, I went back and I actually listened to, I think it was DC3 or DC2, where Meek Mill had half his face and half the line. And he had a song with Fab on there, you know, and I thought Fab's verse went hard, but it was, man, I really just started to appreciate Meek Mill's, his flow, his lyricism, his charisma, his voice. And everybody doesn't always have to be, you know, Eminem on the mic. He just has this character that's just really distinctive. You know, I didn't really know too much about Meek, you know, during the times in his past when he was just coming up, even when he was with Rick Ross and Wale on, what was it? I think, was it the Self-Made album? If I'm correct, if I got the title wrong, then somebody else correct me and everything else. But yeah, man, Meek Mill is, he's yeah, I get a man his due. I really do.
Now, Meek Mill, see, the thing that I like about Meek Mill, that when he did recover and he dropped that championship album, like, wins and losses and championship kind of went hand in hand with what he had going on.
Right.
And the documentary did a good job of covering that too, to understanding, you know, what it was about. But see, it's crazy because, you know, even when I found out, before I watched Free Meek and I found out that judge was black, a black lady doing that to Meek Mill, man, that kind of rubbed me. That rubbed me so bad, man, because, you know, it was hard to understand. You know, now before I saw Free Meek, and if it would have been like he was really doing stuff that was wild and stuff, I'd have been like, damn, she might have been on to something. It might have been right. But, man, the stuff she was doing, man, it just, you can't help but be mad at her.
No, you really can't. And see, I have to really go back and watch that documentary, you know. And I mean, you know, when I'm with the wife, we got it. She don't know anything about Meek Mill, so I'm like, all right, I gotta just sit down. When I have, like, when I'm just by myself and I can just really absorb this documentary and take every detail in, and this conversation is just going to make me keep some things in mind. But I'm going to really pay close attention to the judge's mannerisms and her actions, you know, her decision-making towards Meek, you know, in the documentary. You know what I'm saying? So I lost my train of thought, too, because it was something else I was going to speak. Oh, it was a Drake beat. Okay, so before I got to talk, that's where I was going even mentioning the whole Fabulous thing. So Meek Mill was just, you know, as a rapper, he had that charisma, but he was starting to become the laughing stock. Man, he was really starting to become the butt of, like, jokes in hip-hop. You know, that when you say he was on the dark path, that's exactly where he was headed because, I mean, Drake made him look so bad, you know what I'm saying? And I wasn't a big Meek fan at the time anyway, but I was just seeing how everybody else was talking about how Drake, he just took an L. Like, Meek hold his L with so many memes of, you know, Meek losing, you know what I'm saying, and that sort of thing. And there was actually an interesting interview before Tax Stone. You know, do you know who Tax Stone is, the podcaster?
Yeah, I know Tax Stone.
Yeah, so there was that interview he did, you know, with Meek Mill, where he was driving with Meek Mill and his Wraith, I think, and that was just enlightening. That also, even during that time where he was being humiliated by Drake, it also opened my eyes up, too, like, maybe I should take Meek Mill a bit seriously. Bit more seriously. So that was also something I wanted to mention too, because that I think that was very pivotal in terms of Meek holding on to a very how should I say, serious reputation, to where he's not gonna just take a complete L despite that whole beef with Drake.
Right. Because that, I ain't gonna lie, he was, man, because nobody knew where it came from, it just came out the blue. You know, so Meek did kind of look like the clown of hip hop for a little second because Drake did destroy him. And everybody knows that, you know, even Meek, the sad thing about it is, if you go back and listen to Meek's response to Drake's diss song, Back to Back. When you go listen to Meek's response with the Undertaker theme beat and everything, that thing really was hard. But Meek had already did damage to his career at that point that people wasn't even willing to give it credit. They wanted Drake to be the winner so bad in that case, you know?
Yeah, and see, that the case of karma with Drake is that, you know, because, you know, already, you know, I've been a big Clips fan since, I think, actually, I didn't even care for Clips when they came out with Grindin'. It was hot, but, you know, it was just like, it was like coke rap with, you know, just candy beats by the Neptunes, and I'm a huge Neptunes fan too, but I wasn't a big Lord Willin' fan at the time, but when Clips dropped that, you know, Hell Hath No Fury, I became a huge, huge Clips fan, and then I was looking forward to Pusha T going solo, and I've been a fan ever since. And man, Pusha T, you know, the karma just came back on Drake. You know, I get that context just to show that Pusha T has that history of just, he was gonna come with bars. He was gonna come with a visceral attack against Drake. He's not. He wasn't dumb. He wasn't just. Drake was just wasn't going against some, you know, lame, played out, you know, old dude rapper. That just wasn't the case at all. And karma just came back and bit Drake hard. So I feel like Drake equally got, you know, the treatment that he tried to deliver on Meek. You know what I'm saying? So so I mean. You know what I'm saying? We saw Meek experience, I guess, his losses, but really, man, they're more lessons than losses. Because, you know what I'm saying? Like, now he's winning. He has the favor of the people, you know, I think especially in New York, even in his hometown, Philadelphia, but definitely New York, too. And doesn't New York play a role in terms of this whole case, or am I just wrong for that?
Yeah, no, New York definitely plays a role because it was New York was part of the reasons he was getting supposed violations for probation and all of that. So New York definitely plays a part, but you have to watch the documentary to understand why it plays a part.
Right. So, yeah, I'm gonna definitely catch that documentary. You know, I think this conversation, like I said, just intrigued me a lot more to see it, you know, and kind of understand it a lot better. So to those that's listening out there, you can join me in watching it, and we can have a conversation about this in our comment section. You know what I'm saying? So,
right. Now, Facebook. Now, moving on to the next subject at hand, man, is, and I'm glad that you're on here because me and you, in a lot of facets, this is why twin powers come in, because we're both conspiracy. We're big on conspiracy or whatever, because we can we know how to differentiate conspiracy and reality and everything. But yeah. Jeffrey Epstein, man, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with him, big billionaire, baller, whatever, white guy, old white guy, man, but also aka a pedophile. You know what I'm talking about? And a well-known pedophile. Now, what has happened with Jeffrey Epstein, the man was finna go to a big trial about the whole pedophilia thing going on. And he supposedly killed himself on suicide watch. Do you smell bullshit? Because I call bullshit. You know, yeah, what I'm saying?
You know, and I guess this is the section where you're going to have to label it like, there go them N-words again. There go them boys again. Like, this is the part where you have to leave the podcast and try to know conspiracy. But, I mean, this stuff is real. You know what I'm saying? And while we don't really know, because we're not there, so it comes to the point, though, too. Like, do we just take what the media tells us, well, they say he's dead, like, no, you know, the stuff that happened on, like, Bill O'Reilly, and, you know, not Jeffrey, Harvey Weinstein, you know, do you think those guys, even Kevin Spacey with the whole him molesting somebody and then trying to come out like, oh, I'm gay, do you really think something, like, really happened to them as to why they're out of the spotlight? I believe they're back somewhere in some good old boys, you know, room or whatever, and they're just waiting for some set time when stuff hits the fan, and they can just come out and just say, like, we've been here the whole time. You know what I'm saying? Well, a conspiracy with Jeffrey Epstein is, you know, I actually don't really believe he even committed suicide.
Right.
That's the conspiracy. Like, you know, there's a reason maybe for why the death is being faked. I don't know. You know, I really don't. There's actually, if you go on Apple Podcasts, if you go to what is it? Yeah, podcast on your iTunes, and there's a show called Discovering the Truth with Dan Duvall. There's an episode in terms of what really happened with Jeffrey Epstein. And Dan Duvall is actually a minister. He actually explores conspiracy theories and that sort of thing, you know, in addition to just talking about the word of God. But he interviews somebody that is from the Illuminati tree, somebody from the Illuminati family. And I know this sounds crazy as people are listening to me talk about this, but he interviews somebody, a lady that actually talks about where Jeffrey Epstein is really at right now with the whole, and the reasons why he had to, you know, kind of, I guess, commit suicide. I'm doing air quotes here. Nobody can see it, but why he had to commit suicide. I never heard of the guy until this hit the news. But, you know, I mean, at this day and age, don't nothing really surprise me. And you know what? The more and more that we see stuff like this and it becomes normalized, people going to stop questioning it. It's just like you constantly seeing an okay symbol over your, like, right eye or something like that. People going to stop just saying that 666 is just normalized. Like, oh, it's just the okay symbol, so everything's okay. You know, just keep it very surface level. But those symbols, hand symbols that you see in pictures, you know, for if you're not questioning and asking, like, why is that even there? Why are you even throwing that up on a picture with bunnies or this photo shoot? Why is that? Why have all hand symbols? That's got to be up there. You know, those hand symbols have meanings. But the more and more that people see it, they just going to stop questioning it because people don't really like their safe, cushy lives to be shaken up. And you know, I understand, too, ignorance is bliss. You know, it's better to be ignorant about these things than to try to obsess over them. But, I mean, you can still be aware and just know, like, that ain't right. You know, that's not right at all. Something's very weird about that. So,
facts.
I kind of went on a rant there, but...
No. I was going... We could have got deep into that, but I just wanted to, like, briefly, because, you know... In these movies and in a lot of TV shows and stuff, the stuff that they talk about is not a fantasy. You know what I'm saying? TV shows and movies where they show people they're faking deaths and they go live on these, because Epstein is a billionaire. So it wasn't nothing for him to fake a suicide and go to his island where his pedophilia supposedly was going on anyway, to go back to that island and just never come back to the U.S. or exist ever again. You know, that's nothing for a billionaire. You know, yeah. You just want people to be open to that stuff and stop. The media is so convincing and so, it's so powerful right now that people, when you call it bullshit, they look at you like you silly and shit. And it nobody gives a fuck enough about Epstein to even be that worried to say that it's some kind of theory and shit, man. The man was a fucking pedophile. He was in trouble. He was about to go to a big trial. He was about to probably drop some names that was gonna fuck the world up, and he had to go. You know, that's just what it is, man. You know what I'm saying?
And that part where you said they're probably on an island sipping Mai Tais or something, chilling out of the public eye. I mean, that's probably so true. I mean, we don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Right. We don't know.
Probably arguing to say he's really dead. Each his own, whatever. I mean, honestly, at this point, I really don't. I don't even care. It's not something I'm trying to even like explore in terms of that. I'm aware of it, you know, but I'm not gonna refute, you know, if he is possibly dead, but I do believe otherwise at this time. You know what I'm saying? It's, I don't know, like I said, man, when it comes to, you know, conspiracies, you know, I really try not to obsess over them, but there was where there, let me back up real quick, because you said something in terms of Hollywood and them showing things, the media is really powerful and them showing things. And you know what? Actually, Hollywood does a better job, you know, and you know, I'm quote unquote big time Christian now, so hey, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But Hollywood does a really good job in terms of like telling us things that's about to transpire, you know, in the future. I actually did a video, if anybody wants to go check it out, Is God For or Against Me on my YouTube channel. It was a Key and Peele video about the demonic possessed Taylor. You know, it was just weird. You know, there's a lot of Key and Peele videos that's funny to substitute the where they actually are in a stand-up comedy routine and the guys burn. Like, those, there are some funny, like, the things. One video was just really weird because demonic voice talking about, you know, change is coming, or not change is coming, but things are about to start happening. And then, the end is near. That's what the demonic voice was saying. The end is near. And then at the end of the video, you get this kind of like this last airbender looking kid, you know what I'm saying? And his third eye comes up on his forehead. And the third eye the kid is saying, like, a change is coming. It was so weird, man. It was this mystical, esoteric. And that part in that little skit had no business in that video. You know, and there were people in the comments, I guess they just took it as canned pill humor, but there were several people that peeped like, well, that was weird. Why is that there? And how do people expect us not to keep making these conspiracy theories if they still keep shoving this weird stuff in our face? People better start paying attention to these subtle messages, man. You know, you have talks of a looming recession happening again, and you know, from all the stuff that I listen to, I put two and two together. You know, from some of the Christian podcasts I listen to, you know, you have guys who are prophesying and said that the dollar's going to die, that the U.S. dollar is going to die. There's going to be a lot of chaos and a lot of, you know, people just out. You know, the dollar's not going to save them whatever money they have, and we're going to have to, like, go to a new system that's going to allow us to enter this era of a new, you know, utopia style era, I guess we should say. But it's something that, you know, I guess what people identify as the powers that be is something that they want to happen, because through chaos, order is supposed to come about, you know. So I don't mean to scare anybody even talking about this, but I'm just saying, like, you gotta start putting two and two together, man. Like, Hollywood knows something that, you know, obviously, you know, average viewers just don't know. You know, Hollywood continuously, they mock Christians in their movies. Shape of Water, if nobody's ever heard about that, is about a woman who's sitting up here, you know, dating this birdman. And actually, this movie was, you know, nominated. I think it won an Academy Award. But, you know, the enemy in the movie was this big, mean, evil Christian guy. you know, but the merman was, you know, the this innocent being or something like that, but it was being celebrated. But the nuances in that movie was the fact that what they want to embrace, what they want to start embracing is just these rare beings that's supposed to come into play.
We'll say that one for a future one.
You see how you can just go down this rabbit hole, and I can see the connections. I feel like the Lord allows me to just see certain connections that's taking place. You know what I'm saying? And I can actually speak and back certain things up with scriptures. You know, I actually wrote a whole report in terms of there's a scripture in Matthew that actually talks about, if I don't come back, where Christ actually says, if I don't come back, no flesh shall be left alive. And I think that has a lot to do with the artificial intelligence that we're seeing and the planned technology. But, you know, but since we're on the subject of just conspiracy stuff, like I said, I could just go down a whole rabbit hole, but I would at least like to connect dots so it just doesn't seem like this endless rabbit hole to where it makes sense. So for those of you that's listening, if that's something that you want, just let me know and I'll come up with some things, because I can go for days talking about this.
Yeah. Nah, we gonna plug that one. We gonna cool on that one, because I might dedicate a whole episode to theories and stuff where I call in a few people and get their viewpoints and everything, man, because you're gonna have some that's about the theories and you're gonna have some that look at it like it's all bullshit. And I like to see everybody's opinion on that. But we touched bases on Epstein because that just didn't sit too well with me. You know, the fact that, you know, out the blue, this big billionaire committed suicide with some people supposedly watching him. You know, that just doesn't sit well. So I had to speak on that and, get some opinions about it. But moving on, man. Now, the last thing I want to talk about on the evening is, I don't know if you're familiar with Rich Paul and his beef with the NCAA.
No, you know, man, it's funny because I like keeping up with sports. Y'all don't get to watch like whole games or anything like that anymore, but I love watching documentaries and highlights and news. But I haven't been caught up on that, so you might have to kind of school me.
Okay.
The audience who hasn't heard any.
Yeah.
So with Rich Paul and everything, what we have is Rich Paul is this agent, and he's big in the game in sports. He one of LeBron James guys or whatever and everything. So the NCAA decides, because Rich Paul making all this noise, he getting all these players, got guys getting money coming out of college and everything, the NCAA feels some kind of way. So what does the NCAA do? They come out with these obnoxious, outrageous rules to be able to be a agent as far as dealing with athletes coming out of college. And they were ridiculous, man. Let me see if I can pull up exactly. You know the rules where you had to come to the NCAA office and take a dumbass test in their office. You had to have a bachelor, because I guess Rich Paul doesn't have a degree. But Rich Paul is big in the game. And see, what happens is they made those rules up and they called it the Rich Paul rule. You know, they called it that, the Rich Paul rule, which was obviously directly towards him. They were mad, you know. So now, you know, they come up with these rules. You got to have this degree. You got to come take this test. A lot of this, a lot of that. You know, you can go look it up and see what the exact extent of the, you know, the rule was and stuff. But then I can guarantee you, see, Rich Paul and LeBron James raised a lot of fuss about that. And Rich Paul wrote this letter through the athletic, I think it was, it was something. He wrote a letter about how the rule was, it was racist and all that or whatever, and it wasn't fair and shit. So, of course, the NCAA amended the rule and did away with it, you know what I'm saying? And I'm almost sure that once the NCAA, because they probably did that, it was kind of like how it be, man. The NCAA got in their feelings about something that Rich Paul was doing, and then they got in their feelings, and they just sat down in the office and created a rule out of emotions versus out of, out of actually thinking about it. So once them emotions come down, and Rich Paul and the NCAA getting all this backlash, and then once the NCAA sits down, they think like, damn, A lot of my homeboys who are agents, they don't have degrees either. You know, of course, it probably was a bunch of white people that they knew that didn't have degrees in those requirements that they were talking about. So now it's like, damn, we tripping. So now they throw it away. You know what I'm saying? What do you think about, you know what I'm saying, just from your perspective of just a little rundown? And of course, you'll have to go look it up and actually research the whole thing to get the full gist of it. But just from what I told you, what is your output? What is your input about, you know, that?
Man, so when it comes to athletes, especially NCAA athletes, man, I think I was listening to a Vlad. You know, I love Vlad, man.
I fucks with Vlad.
Yeah, I was listening to a Miko Grimes, I think that's her name, interview, you know, where she was talking about athletes are slaves. You know what I'm saying? And
And
there was also another Netflix series I was talking about. And I'm using these examples to just bring some context because I still have to research this whole Rich Paul incident, you know, but I'm bringing these things in to add context to the fact that when it comes to just giving athletes certain benefits, certain things, you know, it's still all about control. And at the end of the day, that's really what this all just still sounds like. You know, it's just like they're just trying to control the whole situation. Because if this gets away with Rich Paul, then that's going to really open up the floodgates for, you know, other athletes to have certain opportunities that I don't think they want those opportunities to exist with those athletes.
And that's what it boiled down to. It's funny that you said that about control. See, just from you know, listening to what I told you, because I remember probably a couple weeks ago when I was online researching the Rich Paul rule so that I have my facts and stuff when I ran about it. CBS Sport headline said that the Rich Paul rule is just another example of the NCAA trying to control something that they shouldn't be controlling. That was their headline. Everybody knows it, man. The NCAA is so fucking annoying now. You know, they don't want to play the players. They're making billions and billions of dollars off of athletes each day, man. And you want to look at it as some racial undertone because a majority of the NCAA athletes in the sports that do make the money, like football and basketball, are black athletes. But it's an athlete thing, period. You know, because it's white athletes that's suffering from the NCAA not paying them too. You know what I'm saying? It's not just black people, but the NCAA just is total assholes. And the NCAA is still operating on some shit from back in the early 20s, possibly. I saw a documentary about that where they created those rules of not playing the players.
That's the Netflix series I was talking about. I had to actually go back and watch it, but it was very enlightening because it was like, you know, white journalists and other coaches come to light and actually speaking on this totalitarian sort of rule that is existing in NCAA, which is crazy to me because it's really brainwashed people into thinking that, you know, these college athletes have no right or reason to request any sort of support. I'm just really confused in terms of why athletes have to go through college suffering with the bare minimum, barely able to ask anybody anything, when there's no guarantee that they're going to make the pros, you know, in order to be able to say, like, wow, I survived that big hazing I went through as a college athlete that the NCAA put me through to make it to the NFL or the, you know, the NBA or whatever the case may be. I really don't get that, you know. And then you can't do anything else. You can't have a job. You know, I could be wrong. Somebody can call me out and just say, like, you don't know what you talking about. You can't have a job. You says, okay, I don't know those minor details. But for the most part, the popular viewpoint perspective is that you can't work. You can't do anything else. You can only commit to this sports program and go to class. I mean, that's really it. You know, and I mean, you probably get some support from your parents. That's pretty much about it. But I mean, I don't really get that. But people have been brainwashed to think that it's the, what is it? And to me, it goes back to the whole surface level of thinking. Nobody's going to question it. Nobody's going to sit up here and think that is more to it, because the brainwashing is so thick. They're thinking that it's just the the what is the term I'm trying to use here? It's the class. I guess the sports person, an athlete is supposed to have some class about themselves in terms of not, you know, needing those things, or it's about the nature of the sports for the love of the game. I think that's more so what I'm trying to say. It's for the love of the game, you know, because there's a respect to the game. You have to respect the game. It's all this focus on respecting.
Yeah, that shit's stupid.
You know what? I listen to a lot of, like, WWE news, and I like retro wrestling because, my favorite era was, like, 89 to, like, early 2000, like, literally the year 2000 when that whole Vince McMahon and Stone Cold thing was over with. But, you know, they talk a lot. They use this phrase all the time. You know, I hear a lot of wrestlers, like, you got to have respect for the business, but the business don't really, like, love you back at all. You know, it's a lot of dead wrestlers that, you know, did it for the business. You know what I'm saying? They did it because they love the business and stuff, which I guess is fine if that wrestler is saying that they love the business. And some of them do. Don't get me wrong. Some of them do, but it's that they make it seem like this the business, the wrestling business is this, like, God, you know? And if you don't worship this God in this kind of way, it's going to eat you up and spit you out alive.
Hey, man, let me tell you something. It's so fucking stupid that people think like that. You supposed to give your all and put in all this fucking time and shit for the passion of it. Now, it's okay to have a passion for things that you do, but when you doing that passion and you not getting paid a dime for it, man, that shit hit different. You know what I'm saying? And I can say that from experience. You know what I'm talking about? Like, My dealings with coaching and everything like that, you know, people would look at it like, well, you supposed to do it for the passion of the kids. No, fuck that. You know what I'm saying? Like, nah, you know, I love the kids and everything, and that's fine. But no, with the way this shit is, nobody needs to be doing shit for free. You know what I'm saying? Nothing is that lovable to where you should want to do it for free and shit. Now, I'm guilty. I'm like an NCAA athlete. I've done it. I've done the passion thing with it, but it's time out for that shit. I'm from all aspects, from sports to jobs to anything. You volunteering, you know what I'm saying, man? It's something. You got to give a person something for putting in their time, effort, and talents into something. You know what I'm saying?
Even with doing like this podcast, let's say, for example, you know, this is just the first show, but if we're able to, you know, or you per se, and just having whatever guests you're having on, if you're able to do this, one, just because you love having these conversations with people and engaging other people into it, and you build a result from that. You got this ability to where you can generate an audience, you can connect with an audience, you know how to talk to people, you know how to maintain that audience and you know, treat them well and manage that audience to where it's going to, you know, benefit them, and it's going to bring a result back to you. But now you got a valuable skill that other people are going to look for. Because I tell you what, like, brands and stuff, they look at podcasts all the time, like, what kind of audience do they have? How large is that audience? What type of engagement are they having? We need to pay them to see if we can get in front of their audience so we can market our product to them.
Right.
There's even money in that. Nobody, if you have a valid skill and it's bringing value to somebody, you should get a value things for that. You know, whether even if it's not money, you should be bartered something. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody starts off doing something. You know, the passion is just an undercurrent. It's just the one thing that keeps you doing what you're doing, you know what I'm saying, you know, for a long duration of time. You know what I'm saying? There are, you'll hear other people say, like, I'll do this even if I wasn't getting paid for it. You know, and I would have to have, I would have to actually have one job that I actually really love. And then, you know, like, I make YouTube videos. I love making YouTube videos. There's an end goal to that. I would like to do that full time. But, I mean, I have a real job. I have a job, man, coding. And I like to code and stuff, too. I'm getting paid for a valid skill, graphic design, coding. All those skills that I spent a lot of time building up, and now I'm able to provide value, you know, that I feel like I'm worth, and that's only going to continue to grow. I mean, so it's, you know, all this, like, you know, using that as a cover up, and I'm kind of tired of that too. I'm like, you just, you know, doing it for the love of it, and you know, like, I'm just really kind of done with that whole expression. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I understand there's phases too. Like, if you're just trying to get your foot in the door and you're trying to get in the game, then yeah, you probably should. It'll be a good idea just to volunteer and just like, man, I'll do this for free. Just because, but the value is that it's not money. You're trying to get experience. You're trying to show them what you got. So eventually, hopefully, you can make a living off of doing it. There's always an end game to it. You know what I'm saying? But I don't, but this whole like, you know, respect the game and respect the business. No, no, man, that's no, you know, so.
Yeah, it's annoying because adults really think like that. Like, they really have the audacity to think that people want to do shit for free. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's so weird. And to think that especially in college, you know, you don't want them to get paid and you don't want them to accept gifts or get a job. Like, what kind of asshole shit is that? You know what I'm saying? Like, what kind of shit is that to the point you getting $1 million? You could potentially get $1 million off of one big time game of college football in one night, 3 hours. You done made $1 million revenue. Then and it's just it might be wild numbers or whatever, but it's realistic per se.
And that's where, you know, the NCAA is synonymous with the music industry, the entertainment industry, to where everybody else is getting paid but the artist. You know, the artist is the main show front runner, the main showman, but they're the last person to really get paid. When they get paid, they're getting scraps almost. You know,
right.
And so the NCAA is going to profit. These campuses are going to profit off the hard work of, you know, these players. You know, the merchandise, everything else is making them to win in the games. They're profiting off of that. You know what I'm saying? And in order to keep somebody from, like, complaining or there being an uprising from the bottom, you know, people have to be brainwashed into believing and thinking those things. You know what I'm saying? So, but I know doing things for free, that's not really sustainable. It should only be a starting point until you get to a point to where, like, you know, I'll even use myself as an example. I did web design projects for people for free for, like, maybe 3 years. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't until, like, you know, maybe about a year I started. Maybe no, I did it for 3 years. Then, like, maybe back in 2016, I started getting paid clients. They weren't high paying clients, but I started getting paid clients. But I still didn't take this business side of it, like, as serious as I should have, like, with documentation and doing contracts. Cause I just didn't want to be bothered. It was just like the handshake system and stuff. But in this day and age, it's all about documentation and stuff. You know, so now I'm just like, no, you know, if I'm going to do it, you know, we got the barter something. There has to be some sort of value or some other deal that's going to be promised in the future. You know what I'm saying? So it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? But that doing it for free is just not sustainable.
It's not. And, you know, hopefully, man, you know, people will see the light on that shit. You know what I'm saying? And the NCAA will come up off that bullshit and pay them boys. And I heard you reference, too, that somebody, I think I remember in that Miko Grimes interview where she said that athletes were slaves. It made me think about two books that I bought. I bought The $40 Million Slave and a book called Sold Out. Sold was spelled S-O-U-L-E-D, and it was about athletes selling out their bodies, their families, their time and everything for sports, for crumbs. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, at what point, you know, will we realize that, man, in a lot of aspects and facets of all industries in the game, man, we hold the buying power and the paying power that brings the profits to everything. You know what I'm saying? We've got to take that stuff over, man. And eventually the NCAA is going to have to come up off that bullshit, because before you know it, man, somebody is going to create a college league where college athletes are getting paid and getting paid good, you know.
Right. You know, I mean, things are changing. Oh, man, it's funny that you even mentioned, like, somebody's going to, oh, I know what I was talking about, thinking about. So there was, a video I was watching earlier where it was talks about The Rock buying out the IFBB for bodybuilding. you know, because they just got tired. Like, there's so many people just tired of the old system of the Arnold Classic or whatever, and just the way that the IFBB is ran, and they just, you know, they want to add more pizzazz to it, but it's this old school. Like, we need to keep that old school sheen and that tradition on it, and the respect factor, the historical, you know, capable. Well, no, man, throw all that out the window. You know, if it's not, you know, interesting, you know, a newer generation and you know, a younger audience that's coming in, they don't really care about that. They just care about their Instagram feed, and it's, why would I need to do this IFBB stuff if I can just be on Instagram, show off my body, show some bodybuilding tips, people watch me, I have my own audience. Why do I need you? You know what I'm saying? That's and you know, people have to make those shifts. And like you said, you know, we're in such a unique position right now to where, you know, black people could be doing a lot more because we have the technology at our fingertips. And I think we need to definitely do more that stretches beyond just entertainment, obviously, you know. But if we just stay limited in the confines of entertainment, you know what I'm saying, then we're kind of falling into that old Roman system where, you know, the Romans used to coddle their society with just these mindless forms of entertainment, and you know that they wouldn't question nothing. That society wouldn't question anything about what the Roman government was doing. So I think it's the same thing. If we're only just interested in just, you know, entertainment and being entertained and being gladiators that's being taken advantage of, where the, you know, the kings are just, you know, kind of benefiting and eating off of our playing ability, then you know, we're going to stay stuck in the same position.
That's true. That's true. And I think we'll get it together soon. Eventually, you know, it's just going to take a little time for everybody to start realizing. I think it was little wake up calls that we come across, man, where a few black people are realizing and stuff. And then it's starting to grow. Each time those wake up calls hit, more and more people realize things. So it's going to come, man. Well, but Xbox Man, it was a pleasure. Episode 1 is in the books. We got so much we could have talked about, but we'll save it for later. And right now, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna let you plug yourself in. Any links about whatever you selling, anything you want to plug, man, it's your time right now. Go right ahead.
Oh man, it's so much. But let me see here. You can follow me on Twitter. You know what I'm saying? I need to be more active on Twitter, but if you want to, you can follow me at Deshaun L. Johnson on Twitter. You can also follow me at DLJWorks_tech on Twitter as well. But if you search Deshaun Johnson on YouTube and DLJWorks on YouTube and Is God For Against Me on YouTube, you can also find my video content. Come heavy into YouTube. Probably YouTube is more for an audience that I'm trying to, you know, gain that's interested in the same stuff that I am. Facebook is just for people that know me. I try to post about things that I'm interested in, and you kind of hear crickets, you know, like, oh, why am I posting that? Like, you know, people want to see pictures of my family and everything else. I'm not posting that. No, I want to have a conversation. So I'm happy that you had me on here, because hopefully, you know what I'm saying, we can have conversations with people that's interested in the same topics we're going to be talking about here and in the future. So appreciate the plug.
Oh, most definitely, man. We're going to wrap this thing up here. I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to say a few things. Thank you for, you know, checking in with me and, you know, being a part of episode 1, man. Y'all be on the lookout, man. Me and Xbox, man, we dangerous together, so It's some things we got coming, man, but I keep it on the hush for we'll just pop out with it, all right? Xbox, good deal having you, man, and I'll get with you later.
Sounds good. Talk to you later, bro. All
right, man. Now, my brother gone, you know, I want to thank y'all for tuning in, checking out episode 1, man. Really like my little trial run and everything. You know, still working on getting signed and everything better and things of that nature. But stay tuned, man. Episodes 2, 3, 4, 5 and beyond is going to be something different, man. Live from the dash, swinging with Big Young Podcast. Hold up, man. Hold up.